Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast covers everything tech. The hottest mobile phones, tablets, games. We review it, rate it, test it. Whether you're Microsoft or Apple, Android or iPhone, we'll give it to you
again and again.
Black and white. The Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast.
Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Charney.
And I'm your co-host, Shane Orthrup.
Today we're going to be talking about the NES coming back, iris scanning for fingerprints, FCC releasing a new 5G standard, that's for cell phone folks. We're going to be talking about Volkswagen and their smog issue. And we're going to be talking about the digital Bolex if we get any time at the end of the show. So let's go to the NES thing first, and you want to read it?
So, Jonathan, what decade are we in?
2016.
It feels a little bit earlier than that, because not only do we have Pokemon back, and we're getting remakes of all of our favorite 80s movies, but now the NES is back with vengeance.
I'll be honest, the 80s was a lot more funner for me. So out of the two of us, this is going to date me just a tad bit. I remember getting the NES brand new, brand spanking new out of the box. Matter of fact, I've got a power pad somewhere at my parents' house.
Oh, boy.
the one peripheral no kid was ever allowed to use in the 80s. This is kind of exciting. This is everything in the can, right? This doesn't play any cartridges.
No, everything comes with it. So the NES is coming back to store shelves. It's a little tiny console, and it looks like it works with your old NES controllers, from what I'm seeing. So what it does is it's designed to hook up to HDMI, because hooking up your old Nintendo to an HDMI is next to impossible now. And it comes with a bunch of games preloaded into it. So let me read off a couple of them. Balloon Fight, Bubble Bobble, Castlevania, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest, Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr., Double Dragon, Dr. Mario. Basically all of the best Nintendo had to offer with none of the worst. So you don't get
Dr.
Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
As a guy who was actually in the 80s, some of the best and some of the worst. I have to disagree on some of these being good games, at least in my opinion. Castlevania is definitely considered one of the best in the series. Excitebike's an awesome game.
Well, Simon's Quest is arguably a good game.
Oh yeah, yeah.
A lot of people didn't think that the second one was that good, especially considering how difficult it was.
I would say Castlevania, period, is exciting. Now, The Legend of Zelda. That, I'll be honest, if this didn't have The Legend of Zelda on it, nobody would buy it, because that is literally considered one of the best games out there. Ninja Gaiden, Metroid, Galaga.
I'd almost just buy it for The Legend of Zelda, to be completely honest.
So here's my issue. I have literally almost a ton of actual original NES cartridges, and when I first read this story, I'm like, yes, I'm going to be able to play them, and then it tore the heart right out of me. I really love this idea. I think it's cool. There needs to be a way to play cartridges. Now, granted, there's third party ways to do it.
Yes, that's not that big of a deal, Jonathan. You can go on to Amazon and get an NES, an original NES.
It is to me. I want one from Nintendo that will play it instead of me having to constantly fix a 30 some odd year old piece of technology.
Well, here's the thing. The old NES and the Super Nintendo is made out of Nintendium, which is an unbreakable substance. The old Nintendo games still work. The consoles still work after years, and you don't have that big. You shouldn't have that problem. I still run my SNES all the time.
I've fixed my old Nintendo so much it no longer works.
Well, they're very inexpensive. Now, this console itself is not your average $300 console. It's only $60. So if you want a nice blast from the past for very little pocket change, I highly recommend this.
You need to work for their marketing department on that one.
What?
You know, because you said, if you want a blast from the past from very little pocket change, the NES Retro or whatever this is called is for you. I actually think this is cool. This is nothing new. I know Atari came out with something like this.
Oh, Atari's had a couple of these.
I think, was it ColecoVision? This is nothing new. I do think, though, that this is definitely something that was needed. Partially because the younger generation actually doesn't get to play some of the older games unless you're like a gamer or maybe, you know, Shay here, who apparently loves older games.
Oh, I love them.
I got some games for you to play then. Yeah. You know, so I'm actually really excited about this. This is kind of a definitely blast from the past. Now, there's a couple of things. Like I said, I want to be able to play cartridges, and I want to be able to use the light gun, which is honestly, if I remember correctly, impossible to use on modern televisions.
Yes. Now, what's actually kind of cool, too, is a couple of these games are featured in. Do you know of the Angry Video Game Nerd?
Doesn't sound familiar to me, no.
He's a huge YouTuber that only reviews old NES games and, like, the worst of the worst. Because back in the day, there wasn't as much quality control. And it wasn't as bad as Atari's quality control because there was none.
Look up the E.T. game. The E.T. game is so bad, they actually put it in landfill, buried it, and then only recently dug it back up.
There's a documentary about it, and a lot of people actually argue that the E.T. game isn't as bad as everyone claims.
By the way, that documentary is hilarious just based on the fact that they were excited to find a bunch of cartridges in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a good documentary. I really feel bad for the guy who created E.T. because he made some of the best Atari games, and then he made E.T. in 5 weeks, though. Like, he did it in a very small amount of time.
And that's insane for the amount of programming you had to do back then.
But there's a lot of NES games that are just terrible, and the Angry Video Game Nerd reviews them. And a lot of them are hard. Like, back in the day, like today, if you play video games, you'll probably be there for like 8 hours, 12 hours is like the max for a video game these days. Sometimes you'll beat a game in 4 hours, and it's ridiculous, and it's too easy. And back then, there was like a lot of a challenge.
So wait, hold on. Set the Wayback Machine to my childhood here. Back in my day, see, the best thing all you whippersnappers have is you guys get a save button. Back in my day, a save button was leaving the thing on and hoping your mom wasn't going, oh, why'd you leave this off, on? You'd turn it off, and right in the middle of like 26 hours into the game.
Well, what was really cool about the Super Nintendo was you could save to the cartridge. Like, the memory card was built into the cartridge, which was kind of cool. So when I actually got a PlayStation, I didn't realize I needed a memory card. I thought it would save on the console or on the disc or whatever, and then I didn't have a memory card for like the first 3 years I owned a PlayStation.
So you at least kind of know the pain of, like, I don't know, into level 1,000 into insert game title here.
Oh, yeah. Just leave the PlayStation on. I had one of my friends, I let him borrow The Punisher for PlayStation 2, and their memory card would corrupt every time they tried to save. It didn't happen on my console, but it happened on theirs. So they just left The Punisher on, like, for a week straight until they beat the game.
I see, leaving the power on is a lifestyle, ladies and gentlemen, an expensive one. I'm excited about this. Whether I get it or not, I don't know.
I'm probably not going to.
So if you guys are listening who are making this, could you send Golden State Media Concepts Technology Podcast a demo unit?
You add Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2 Snake's Revenge?
This is for scientific research, trust me.
Sorry, not Metal Gear Solid, just Metal Gear. Metal Gear and Metal Gear Snake's Revenge. I want those games on this console.
One of my favorite games, was it Robot War or something, is not on this, but I think that's a little more of an obscure title. Now we're going to switch to a different story. We're going to be talking about the new 5G standard that has been released by the FCC, and I don't know if my co-host wants to kick in on this.
Yeah, let's talk about the 5G for a little bit. So after, 6 years since 4G came out, they're finally announcing that 5G is on its way, but won't be here till 2020.
And in my neighborhood, probably 2040. I guess it happens when you live in the middle of nowhere.
So basically what 5G is because of all the bandwidth and everything that 4G is using, they're moving up and they're bringing technology to the fifth generation. So
I wonder if this has to – that this was forced because of, you know, like the iPhone type of thing. Like, I remember, especially in San Francisco and the other areas, when the iPhone 3 and all that started coming out, you started having bandwidth issues. I wonder if the 4G, 5G, and all this was starting to get pushed really heavily because everybody using smartphones.
Probably. And it looks like, according to this, Verizon, Sprint, and AT&T are already beginning to test the 5G. So they're testing it, they're working on it, and they're going to give it to us pretty soon.
I wonder if this is going to require any, like, hardcore tower upgrades, because if there's...
Yes,
if
they actually mentioned that in the article. They talk about how they're going to be putting up a lot more towers and how they're going to have to upgrade them and all of that. Now, that's why it's going to take so long to bring 5G to the public.
No, my main curiosity on this one is, will this work with the same towers? Are they going to have to do more because, say, it just doesn't reach as far out? And because if this is true, you're going to see it in Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Boston. It'll be in the major metropolitan areas before anything else.
We'll probably get it here in Sacramento.
See, because I'm thinking if it's a shorter like distance, they're going to have to triple the amount of towers. It's kind of what I'm thinking.
Well, it doesn't say whether or not it's going to have a smaller range. I honestly think the range will probably be better.
I'm hoping so, because if the range is better, this will become closer to at some point in time maybe competing with some of the actual ISPs. Now, you're going to have a little bit of a bandwidth cap, but if you can make internet cheaper everywhere, you know, rural areas and whatnot, you're going to start having competition for AT&T, Comcast, and all them.
Right. So basically the biggest thing that's going to happen is this is going to make better bandwidth and more availability to use more bandwidth. And that's kind of where they're going with this, I think.
No, it makes sense. I mean, with the proliferation of smartphones and other technologies, they're going to have to do something. And I remember reading something about the UE, Japan, and a bunch of other countries starting to look into it too. So this must be the new world standard.
Oh, even North Korea is...
So one person?
Pretty much.
I am curious on this is going to work with Verizon's CDMA LTE technology. Because AT&T, at least in the United States, uses GSM. And GSM is pretty much more of a world standard. Granted, there's variations of it. I'm really curious to see how Verizon's going to go with this.
Yeah.
Because I could totally see in the future them having to switch to a GSM.
And I'm excited to see faster speeds and, you know, maybe I won't have as much problems with my GPS.
Now, we're going to a bit of a break. Now, after the break, we're going to be talking about something that every gearhead and geek pretty much is interested in, is how VW, Volkswagen, beat the system.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Now, if you've been watching any news, local news, you just news period, you're going to be hearing about how Volkswagen had an issue that the only way to solve it was to hack it, pretty much, just bluntly say it. You know, what happened is they couldn't get some of their vehicles to pass United States smog, definitely not California state smog. So what they found out is when you plug the system into your car and you get ready to go, it actually switches to a different mode. So it looks like it passes smog in the emissions test, but once you unplug all the equipment, it actually goes to a second mode, which is pollutes more, probably more horsepower. This is a major no-no in California. I'm almost positive it would be considered a gross polluter by California standards, at least. The scheme itself was discovered in September by U.S. and California environmental regulators, California here, folks, affects about 500,000 vehicles in the U.S. and 11 million cars worldwide. Now, when this first happened, when I remember hearing about it, a lot of the news reports were wondering, is this the scandal that's going to bankrupt Volkswagen? So a little bit more information about it. The software is embedded in the vehicle's electronics that would allow cars to emit up to 40 times the legally allowed amounts of nitrogen oxide, were appearing to test to be within limits. Now, like I said, gross polluter, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure is not a big, if not a big fine for us, but definitely for them.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge lawsuit about this. The United States government was going after it. The car met environmental regulations when testing a dynamometer. Basically, what that is it's a treadmill for cars.
Exactly.
So what a dynamometer is pretty much you got some wheels and they put your drive wheels on it and pretty much floor it. And so when you do that, you can test horsepower and a bunch of other things. But it's also allowing sensors and the computers to test your car's smog, the amount of pollution.
They're actually really cool. Have you ever seen one of those?
Not a person. I've one of my favorite TV shows. They use them.
Yeah, my uncle owns an auto shop in Reedley. It's right next to Fresno, and so I've got to see those in action. And they're actually kind of cool.
That's awesome. I wish I was like I'm a big car guy, but I don't know how to work on cars, which is kind of ironic. Now here's something. I've read a bunch of news stories about it, and the most interesting thing news story I found was it was the West Virginia University. Regulators devised a special test that detected how the software and the electronic control system was fooling the test. Pretty much, they had to have a major university study the vehicle systems to figure out how exactly it was bypassing the smog test.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's hardcore, ladies and gentlemen. That definitely proves the fact that they couldn't, Volkswagen, couldn't figure out how to make their vehicle test smog, and 40% more is an insane amount of pollution.
It's interesting, too, because I know California has some really tough smog regulations, and it's really hard for a lot of automobile companies to hold up to those smog regulations. But how is it for the rest of the United States?
If I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I've looked, California, I think, has the hardest standards, I'm almost positive. I had a friend of mine who got tagged for smog, and he actually had to remove all his aftermarket stuff on it. It was part of the smog, had to go back to stock.
It's really interesting because like I've known some people that because of smog they had to get rid of their car because it was more expensive to actually get it to smog standards than to they could just buy a new car.
Now I remember hearing about how, for example, one of the things they do for smog in cars is called a catalytic converter.
Yes.
California's catalytic converters have platinum in it. And I was reading actually for this story. I don't think any other states have rare metals inside their catalytic converters.
Well, and the thing too is that sometimes the catalytic converter isn't enough.
Oh, no. I had a truck, for example, that had two or three of them.
Oh, God.
No muffler, but it had three catalytic converters, which can affect your performance. Some vehicles like having a little bit of back pressure. Some don't. There was actually, you talk about catalytic converters, there was actually a theft a number of years ago of people going to their cars and finding their cars were running weird, looked underneath their car, somebody had literally cut out their catalytic converters because you can be scrapped because of the precious metals that's inside of it.
That's really interesting.
So this is a giant problem for Volkswagen. Now, they suspended some managers and I'm pretty sure they're being fired for it. And the question is, what's going to be the fine for Volkswagen? Now, I've heard some numbers. I haven't found anything for certain on what they're going to do. Now, I know the government has basically told Volkswagen, you're going to fix this and you're going to do it now. Now, I haven't heard of any fix coming down because if it couldn't pass smog beforehand, the only way I could think it's going to pass smog is they're going to put more emissions device on it, and it's going to affect the performance. Now, if it affects the performance, can you use the lemon laws? Because it's not the vehicle you originally purchased. It doesn't have the pep, doesn't have the horsepower.
Right.
And so does this mean Volkswagen's also going to have to pay for $500,000 new cars and 11 million worldwide?
Well, and I'm wondering if it's just affecting the United States or if it's affecting European countries as well, because I'm sure they could probably sell it in a lot of other countries, and they wouldn't even care.
I bet this is worldwide.
Okay.
It has to be. I mean, because there's got to be other countries. Granted, probably China, maybe India, some of the other countries that don't have, I mean, not the pollution problem, but I mean, they do, but just don't have as hardcore regulations like the U.S. and probably Europe, some European countries.
Most countries don't have it as tough as California's laws.
Now, I just pulled up a number because I was trying to figure out what is the number for the fine they're going to face. Now, they might be fined up to $18 billion or $37,500 per car. That is one of the biggest fines I have ever heard of for an auto manufacturer. Now, what do you think? I mean, if you owned one of these Volkswagen, what would your thought? What would you do?
I'd be pretty upset, especially here in California. VW is one of those brands that a lot of people trust. I've trusted them. I like Volkswagen. And, you know, it's kind of a shame. Like, I would be very upset if I bought a brand new car and it couldn't pass mock.
Now, would you feel like, you know, betrayed? Would you feel upset? Because
I is
a car guy who loves performance vehicles. I would be upset. I mean, up to the fact that as soon as I heard this and depending on what the fix would be, I might end up getting rid of the car.
Yeah. Well, VW is, like I said, it's one of those brands that a lot of people trust, including myself. My family's a big VW family. We love Volkswagen. And I think we'd just feel betrayed if we bought one of those cars and ran into these problems, you know?
Yeah, I'm actually flabbergasted. I mean, I've had cars with issues before, but nothing to this level.
Well, and VW's kind of been letting us down a lot lately. Like, their new bugs are hard to work on. The radiator's in a weird spot. It's hard to get to certain things, and a lot of repair shops don't like to work on a lot of the newer VWs, especially the Jetta.
I mean, this is that particular issue is not new. I know when the 60-something Mach 1 Mustang came out, the drain plug is right on a cross member, so they would also charge you for having to jack up the engine to change oil.
Yeah.
So there's been problems with, like, far as hard to work on. But, yeah, from what I've heard of the new bugs, it's on Apple level of frustrating to work on.
Yes. Some shops won't take them. They just won't take them.
I'm not surprised. I know, what was it? I think I was talking to an acquaintance of mine about how some codes and trouble codes they don't give you, or there's some limitation on stuff, or you have to buy expensive, like, factory testers because they're the only ones with have certain things.
So, you know, like, we trust VW and everything, but, like, I feel like they've kind of been going down this road for a little bit, you know?
I'm honestly kind of think this is going to be the way all car manufacturers are going, you know, because of the technology in cars. I think it's, as much as this pains me to say it, I think the day of the shade tree mechanic, folks, is slowly going to the way of the dodo, because you have ECUs, MCUs, and you have all these modules. It comes to the point that I don't think you're going to be able to work on your own car. I think this is just a symptom of a future problem. And I think the problem is, I think they're right in the beginning of it.
I think that we're going to run into that problem, but then we're going to get some car manufacturers that realize people want it back the old way.
Like a boutique car manufacturer? Or do you think this is Ford's going to be introducing, you know, like the new e-car where you can work on it yourself type of thing?
I feel like American companies are going to be less likely to do that sort of thing.
I definitely agree with you. I know, for example, German cars like BMWs specifically and some Mercedes are known for being a pain in the ass to work on.
Oh God, don't get a BMW, don't get a Mercedes.
So I don't know. I'm really hoping, because it really pains me. And we're coming up to a hard break. So ladies and gentlemen, when we come back, we're going to be talking about some really interesting technology involving your eyes.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's gsmcpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit gsmcpodcast.com for more info.
And welcome back. Now, right now, we're going to talk about something that's a little bit interesting. Apparently, the FBI has been talking about switching over from fingerprint scans to retinal scanning and iris scans. So the FBI has officially scanned the irises of nearly 460,000 people in their pilot program. And this may or may not soon replace fingerprints. So they've been doing retinal scannings of a bunch of inmates and felons. And
now, was it voluntarily? Did say in the story? Or
I'm
was it just
pretty sure it's not voluntary.
So they just said, okay, you're insert criminal here. Let me see your eyeballs.
Yep. So it's pretty interesting because one of the things is nobody's eyes are the same. Like all of our irises are different. So, and there's been some really interesting theories about it. There was a movie about it. I forget what it's called, but in the movie, the guy is looking for his like dead wife's reincarnation because he thinks that when people are reincarnated, they have the same irises as what they had in a previous life.
Interesting, because I was actually going to bring up the movie Minority Report, and there's one particular scene in Minority Report where Tom Cruise's character is walking through a mall, and everything's reflecting off his eyes and reading his retinas.
Interesting.
And
interesting.
It's picking up advertisements, you know, like Mr. Cruise, you bought 3 quarts of X brand oil, type of thing.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because the iris scanning has been around, like the technology has been around for 25 years, and we're now just getting to the point to where we're using it and it's relevant and it's relatively bug-free. So this might be the new way that we crack down on crime. I'm pretty sure we're going to keep around fingerprints just because we can figure out who's done what. But iris scanning might be the way that we might start recognizing people and, you know, ID.
That kind of bugs me a little bit. I mean, at least with fingerprints, you know, you find them at the scene of the crime. I mean, I just could see iris scanners everywhere. For example, like Minority Report, and you know, you're doing it that way.
It's really interesting because it's like we always see iris scanning and stuff like that in movies, but it's kind of cool that it's becoming like a legitimate thing that we're seeing in our everyday lives. The future made reality.
I'm on the other side of it. I wish it would just stay a movie trope. Because the technology is cool. It does kind of scare me a little bit. You know, maybe people thought this about fingerprints, but I don't know. I could see this going way out of left field. The best way I could think about it is if you go to Disney World now, you have like these bracelets you can buy. These bracelets have RFID tags on it, and they can read the RFID tags from like 20 feet off the ground.
Well, it's interesting too because apparently, like Nokia and a few other phones have some phones have iris scanners to unlock your phone. Apparently, Nokia and I can't pronounce the other name of this company.
So then it's gonna. So the question: Have you seen? What's the movie called? Demolition Man.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in Demolition Man where Wesley Snipes' character takes somebody's eyes out so they can get out of jail, for example. Spoiler report. So this is why I've watched a little bit too many, way too many movies. But this is why the technology scares me. I mean, it works with thumbprints. I'm losing a finger, you know?
Right. Well, have you seen, did you ever play the game Splinter Cell?
Yes.
In Splinter Cell, a big part of the game was knocking people out and using their eyeballs to get into doors.
I don't remember that part of the game.
You knock them out and then like you slam their face into the iris scanner. And
yes. I remember that.
That was a really big part of that game.
Now, I'm trying to think, in all honesty, where this would come in handy for fighting crime. I think for security and in high-level areas, I think this is one of the best things you can do, a combination with things. It's perfect.
I think that this might be a really good way to like identify people, especially like if the police could get a hold of it and like just scan your retinas instead of having to show them your ID.
I guess I could see that because I'm trying to think, you know, maybe going to the extreme level of say if you have a guy who was this mass murdering thief or something and he had his face change. You can't change your eyes.
Well, and that's actually something that I am kind of concerned with. It's like, so, I mean, you can change your fingerprints and you can burn them off. And I mean, in the beginning of Seven, he like cuts them off.
Oof.
And the movie Seven. And I'm kind of like worried of like, can you alter your eyes in any way? Like, what would happen if you use the retinal scanner but you're wearing contacts?
My assumption would be, and this is kind of a big guess, that on most contacts it can read through it.
But there are also those contacts that are like gray market contacts that like make your eyes weird colors.
Or bigger.
Or like you get the ones that make your eyes look like you're Satan.
See, that's my question. What happens if you figure out, somebody figures out, you know, say they knock somebody out and copy his irises. What happens if they have contacts that when scanned, it copies that? Honestly, this is...
I feel like that would be harder to make than a fingerprint thing.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, this is getting in the realm of movies. One of the reasons we keep bringing them up is because movies sometimes are the best way to judge how technology
movies is. And science fiction novels.
Exactly. What was it, like the book Mote in God's Eye, when it talks about like handheld computers and all that? I think it was in the 60s. So all of this worries me, and this is all kind of tinfoil hat. You know, it's the same thing we talk about with AIs.
Yeah. We're terrified and we love technology.
See, I don't think this is a bad technology, but on the other hand, I can see it being used in a bad way. I don't like the idea of cops having iris scanners.
Oh, I think it's a great idea.
See, we're going to have to disagree on this just because I'm afraid of it being used poorly. I mean, maybe not. Maybe it'll just be like, hold up your eyes, scan. Okay, Mr. Smith, you have a $500 fine for doing insert thing here. And maybe it'll go fine. But on the other hand, I could see it going sideways really fast.
I feel like it could make traffic stops and stuff like that like a lot quicker.
So what if instead of having a cop do a traffic stop, every so often there's a reader, you break the law, flash it off your eyes, and then boom, you just get a fine in the mail.
Interesting.
See, that's what it scares me. And it scares me from the point of everything being automated. If a cop pulls me over, I'm talking to an actual person. Now, granted, everything goes sideways, like I said, but I'm more analog the older I get than anything.
That already happens, though. I mean, if you run a traffic stop and there are the cameras around, you can get sent a fine in the mail. Like, that's already things that
happen. I don't like that either.
Yeah, no, I don't like it. But
and there's certain parts of Sacramento, for example, that have them everywhere.
Oh yeah, it's on every light in Sacramento.
And some of them, the timing is dubious, to be without going too far in the weeds. So in the end, to kind of wrap up the story, I'm really curious to see how this goes. I want to see how the technology goes. For security purposes, I think this is the best way to go. I'm more afraid of it going in odd places. I don't even want the like Minority Report ads, you know, say, you know, you're walking through, you know, the weirdest thing, and this is way out of left field, but this is also out of Minority Report. Say, for example, you bought your wife or girlfriend something intimate, and there's this, you walk by this ad, and it says, well, you bought this, you're going to want this.
That would be scary.
I can totally see that happening.
Oh, yeah, especially if you're buying yourself naughty adult toys.
Yeah, I wasn't going to go there, but yes.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, you know, whoever you're with sees that, ooh. I could see some real hazing from friends because of this.
And I know some people are laughing at me going, oh, that would never happen. The problem is I'm a true believer in movies kind of dictate the way society goes.
Not just movies. I mean, look at – like you open up your laptop and if you're like me and I'm always looking at cameras and stuff like that, that's all I see is like borrow lenses ads and all of that all over my Facebook. It's already happening. It's just not happening on that scale yet.
Oh, yeah. I used to get – I don't do anything weird, and I get odd. I used to get some really bizarre Facebook ads. We'll talk about them off air because some of them I just made me laugh.
Oh yeah, I could give you a few stories. One more thing that I wanted to talk about real quick is: are you familiar with the Digital Bolex camera?
No.
So the company Bolex, it was a crowdfunded thing, actually, I believe. There was a camera that came out, and it was a digital HD camera that mocked the old Bolex film camera, like the old 16mm Bolex film camera. And so what they did was you could use lenses from the original Bolex. It had a couple XLR ports, internal memory of up to a terabyte. Some of them were 250, some were 500, some had a terabyte. And it was mocked after the old Bolex, but it was supposed to give you as close to film look as you could get with HD.
So you're doing digital interpolation of film quality.
Yes. Now, the big problem with it being is not everybody wants that look, and not a lot of people wanted to use a Micro Four Thirds lens, which is a little tiny lens.
So basically it comes down to you can do something in post versus having a specific camera.
Yeah, and you might not be able to do it in post well, and the actual footage from the Digital Bolex was kind of cool. It's just the only problem is that to use a digital – the biggest problem with the Digital Bolex was that it had the problem with – it was a passion project camera. You had to have a project that required that look. You had to have the lenses, which were hard to get, and you could get adapters for the lenses. It's just that if you were to put – it was a times two thing. So, like, if you were to put a 50 millimeter lens on there, all of a sudden it's 100 millimeter.
Wait, it was fixed?
What was that?
I mean, the everything – it had no adjustability in the lenses?
You could take off lenses and put them on, but the thing was if you were to, like, switch over to, say, like, Canon lenses and use a adapter, which you could get, it would times the number of the lens by two.
Whoa.
Which meant that using wide angles was not something you could do unless you were super far away. If we were in this little studio right now, like, we would need a really wide lens, like an 18, to even get both of us in the shot. Like, it was ridiculous.
Wow.
So, and unless you had your little Micro Four Thirds lenses, which were little. And correct me if I'm wrong about that, because I could be mistaken.
So I guess that makes sense. It was a project that a small minority of people wanted.
Right. And so I went to Slam Dance in 2015, and I got to experience that whole Sundance, Slam Dance thing. And one of the things they were really promoting, the Digital Bolex, like, they wanted everyone to shoot on it. They wanted everyone to, like, take a look at it. And it was a pretty cool, inexpensive camera. It was $3,000. But for $3,000, you could get much, much better cameras.
Oh, hands down, $3,000 can get you a decent 4K camera.
But the thing that was interesting about it was that rentals were really inexpensive. Like, you could get, like, I could get, like, a Digital Bolex for, like, 7 days for less than $100, which was really nice.
Now, I have a question, and this is kind of out of left field. Would this be something, say, I don't know who really manufactures cameras anymore, but say, for example, Sony. Sony buys them lock, stock, and barrel, and then Sony comes out with a version of it. Not, you know, not made a lot, more boutique. What do you think that something would happen? Because it sounds like something people would want, but not something a single business would be able to survive solely on.
Actually, they have discontinued the camera. That's what I wanted to talk about. So it's been discontinued, and it's kind of sad because a lot of filmmakers like myself and a lot of my friends were really excited about it, and they really wanted to use it. And you could still get your hands on one, but since it's been discontinued, a lot of my people are just kind of like upset.
Now, see, what I'm thinking is with film and stuff like that being retro is starting to be in. This is just, it's a new trend. I can see one of these people picking up the basic idea of it and running with it. Now, maybe they'll be a little more intelligent with how they do it instead of being limited to a certain form factor. Maybe they'll figure out how to combine it with a standard camera or make it a mode, or I don't know. I just don't see this going away. I think this is going to be the beginning of a very larger trend.
And that's what I thought too. And then I just didn't see it pick up. Like, it just didn't. There are so many drawbacks to the camera itself, like, say, the Micro Four Thirds lens and the fact that the battery is internal, that, like, a lot of people just kind of shied away from it.
Okay, so they shot themselves in the foot.
Really, it's just like how I feel about virtual reality and 3D. It was kind of like a fad.
Yeah, no, it's totally. It's like curved TV. It's all a gimmick.
And when it first came out, we were all really excited about it, but I haven't met a single person to shoot on it. Besides whoever was at Slam Dance, there were a few people I knew there that shot on it.
Interesting.
And they didn't really have the best things to say. Like, they were like, yeah, it's okay.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, unfortunately, we've come up to the end of today's podcast. I want you to do me a favor. I want you to go to gsmcpodcast.com and subscribe to this podcast, the Technology Podcast. Now, there is a ton of other great podcasts here, but in our humble, small opinion, we're the best. But there's also Weird News, there's MMA, there's a bunch of great stuff we want you to take a look at. But before you all do that, we want you to go to iTunes and subscribe. And we also want you to go to our Facebook page at GSMC Technology Facebook. We want you to go to Twitter. And specifically on Facebook, I want you to find this episode. This is number 16. And I want you to comment, is there anything that we're wrong? Do you think we're right? Do you think there's a story that you want us to talk about? Post it there. And as always, this is Jonathan Charney.
And Shay Northrup.
Thank you for listening.